Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, July the 6th, as we like to do once a week. We'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots of stuff to get into today. We're also going to hear from Bill. I have a big question for Bill. Who exactly won the Democrat primary? I'm sure he may give us an update on that. But let me begin, Bill. I always like to ask you, how's the weather in New York? So why don't you give us a weather report from the big city?
Well, I'm about 20 miles north of New York City. The weather in New York is actually quite good, very clear. It's a very clear day, but it's going to be a very hot day. So the concerns are up already. The warnings are up already to be careful going out, to be careful of the heat. And, of course, there is the immediate concern about the power grid, the concern about Con Edison, which is the electric company here, which is not exactly known as one of the more up-to-date rocket science companies. And, you know, we can lose power. So here. And hot weather also is associated with high rates of crime. So, you know, when you get
into... Yes, that's right. We're going to get into that in a few minutes.
Sure.
The weather is very nice here in Texas, in North Texas. It's going to be in about 91 or 92 today. So it's a good, beautiful day, sunshine, beautiful day, to say happy birthday to President George W. Bush, Bill, who lives in this area, who has been fairly quiet since he left the presidency, and I think he's right to do that. But he looks great. I saw a picture of him the other day, because he gets around town a little bit. He looks absolutely great, Bill, for a man who's 75. He's very fit, athletically, a very fit man, Bill.
Yes, he is, and I think he has, as you said, conducted himself very well since he's left the presidency. I'm sure he has a lot to say, especially now. And I think, as is often the case, he looks better and better as history goes on.
That's right. He really does. Now, there's also another important holiday. You know, we like to, not holiday, but a very important date. And we always like to separate the politics when we talk about stuff like this. But President Carter and Mrs. Carter celebrated 75 years of marriage. And it's a great trivia question, I suppose. If any other, I kept looking, but I couldn't find any other president and his wife who were around by the time they got to the 75th year of marriage. I mean, President Bush, the first President Bush, got close to that, but did not quite make 75. And I think that's remarkable. Congratulations to President and Mrs. Carter, Bill.
Yes. Yes, it's always good to see a marriage last that long, and on a personal basis, wish them the best. Obviously, I'm not on his side politically.
Sure, but, no, neither am I.
It's wonderful to see that. You know, we should put an emphasis on marriage in this country and put an emphasis on making marriages succeed. It's rather easy to break them up under law today, but it is a great thing to see a marriage succeed over the years. 75 years, my goodness, that goes back into the 1940s.
Right. Well, and that was my point. I wanted to mention that, because they were married in 1946. So he was, I guess, a young man in his early 20s, and sure was she, a young woman about that age. But, you know, there's so much we saw this weekend, Bill, so many attacks on the Declaration of Independence, including – you know, the idea that it was only written for white men and stuff like that. And there were so many attacks. But yet, when you look at the world, the day that President and Mrs. Carter were married, 1946, this was such a different country for a black person than it is today. I mean, the people marching in the streets, these people in the woke movement, apparently have no idea of the progress that the country has made just in the 75 years that this couple has been married, Bill.
That's absolutely correct. And what is amazing is how many of these woke people are themselves presumably highly educated. Now, we ought to put a set of quotes around the word educated, because I think the definition of what that means will be changing over the years as people realize the emptiness of many of our schools and the absolute mediocrity of many of our universities. You know, this is not a new problem. It really is not. I remember when I went to college, which was many decades ago, it was said very commonly that many American colleges are glorified high schools. And I'm sorry to say it's probably worse today. But our educational system has let us down. Institutions have let us down. Journalism is letting us down. And I think many Americans are concerned that the greatness of America is being lost in a series of very preventable problems.
That's right. And it is interesting. I mean, statistics are now showing that parents are doing everything they can to either fight the public school board or get their kids out of public schools. And that's going to have consequences, because if we get to a point down the road where more and more parents are getting their kids out of public schools, and many of these state legislatures begin to pass school choice options for parents, as is being discussed in many states, you know, that's going to hurt the public school teacher, who I think for the most part is a good person who's trying to do their best, but they're working in such a lousy teaching environment where the teachers' union seems to be more concerned with reelecting Democrats than making sure that Johnny or Mary can read or write, Bill.
That's absolutely correct. I remember when teachers' unions got started in the early 1960s under the guidance or influence of a man named Albert Shanker, who was actually a fine educator. And there were great concerns about teachers' unions, as there are about all public service unions, that the union would begin to dominate the profession and that the union would be dictating what was going to be taught. I think we're getting pretty close to that now. The influence of hard left unionism on our schools is obvious. It is getting worse. Parents are now in revolt against it. The parents are now being attacked. I was almost amused by the actions of the state PTA in Virginia, which is trying to disassociate itself from some local PTAs because too many parents are getting active. And they really don't like it. I mean, because those parents are against what the state PTA stands for, the state PTA being dominated apparently by either the teachers' unions or people sympathetic to the teachers' unions. And this critical race theory, which is a scandal and an insult to the country, the anti-American that is Americanism that is being taught. You know, they tell you that never before this era have the defects in America been mentioned in the school system, and we're simply issuing a corrective. That is not true. I learned about slavery in the eighth grade. I asked questions in my class about slavery. We knew, and we're very sensitive to the civil rights movement. Teachers did teach about the fact that at the Constitutional Convention, there were no women, there were no members of other groups, but they balanced it, more than balanced it, with an understanding of what American history is really about, which is constant revolution, constant change, and constant improvement. We did not have women's suffrage when the Constitution went into effect, but we did eventually get it. We did have slavery in part of the country, only part of the country. When the Constitution was written, there was a discussion at the Constitutional Convention. Slavery was not eliminated, but we fought a civil war over slavery, and it was eliminated. And nobody is suggesting that the country has always been perfect or is perfect now. There are no perfect countries. The only perfect countries that exist exist in the minds of socialists and in the mind of fantasy writers. But
and people try to escape from those countries.
Oh, absolutely. That's the point. you know, they keep on telling us, I mean, what an awful country this is for black folks. And certainly there are still problems. But hundreds of thousands of black Africans come to this country under law each year. Mm-hmm. I wonder why they're coming. Are they all misinformed? I mean, did somebody give them a bad deal or give them a bad book or they have been, maybe their radios in those countries were always stuck on Rush Limbaugh. I mean, maybe that's the only person they heard. But
you're right. But you know what's interesting? Go ahead and finish. I just wanted to say something that Britt Hume said over the weekend. Yeah, Britt Hume, who's now, I guess, a Fox News contributor, I guess he's always been, but yesterday he was being interviewed, and he was being interviewed about all these attacks on the Declaration and the flag and the birth of the nation and all of that. And he said, you know, what strikes him, and I'm paraphrasing, but what strikes him is that the people who criticize the United States never say what other flag they would rather salute or what other country has accomplished what they say we have not. So, I mean, they never say, well, gee, you know, in this country they don't have that. In this country they don't have that. So it's always this crazy emphasis on the imperfection of the United States. Over the weekend, NPR read the Declaration of Independence, which is great. People should read it. But they read it and kept saying, well, it didn't include blacks. It didn't include women. No, it didn't. Any person with any degree of history, knowledge of history, knows that in 1776, there were no women that I could think of in any other country in the world who were elected or voted for anything, Bill. I mean, that's the way it was. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but that's the way it was. Certainly the black slaves, there were black slaves in other countries. So it just seems to me that we have this maddening obsession with criticizing the country. I think it's tearing up the country because it's not balanced, and that's why so many parents are angry at the schools, not because, as you say, they're telling the kids that Washington had slaves. I remember hearing that when I was in school, but it's like they don't put it all in the context, so the kids end up leaving the school saying, what a terrible country I live in. And that's
I'm afraid
awful,
that's right.
Bill. Yeah.
Well,
I do think, Bill, forgive me for interrupting again, I do think that this situation, we've turned the corner on this, and I think you're seeing more and more parents and more people saying, we're not going to put up with this anymore. And I do see a big backlash coming, if it's not already happening, to the woke movement. It's gone crazy. It's gone beyond. You know, when Bill Maher, not exactly a Trump fan, when he criticizes the woke people and the cancel culture constantly, you know that something's wrong, Bill.
Oh, I think so. And I think that you saw over the weekend the statistics that came out from a late poll that only 30% of young Americans are proud to be American. That's outrageous. It's just outrageous. It does not reflect reality, and it does not reflect well on the people who are teaching these kids. I mean, we are still the leader of what was commonly called the free world, the democratic nations. We are also a country upon which many countries depend for their very existence. And with these attitudes that are being taught, we may falter in these responsibilities. And if we do, it's going to be a pretty sorry world. And you know, that is something that isn't being discussed. There are real grown-ups in America who are concerned right now as we speak about things like our relationship with China, about the Taiwan Straits, about the possibility of combat involving American forces in the Taiwan Straits. They're concerned about the expanding influence of Iran in promoting terrorism. They're concerned about this administration's attitude toward Iran, which seems at times rather lax. They're concerned about a lot of things that grown-ups are concerned about. They're concerned about the vast difference between the overwhelming costs of higher education and what is actually delivered, which again is not a subject that we present for the first time. It's a subject that has been on the agenda in America for many, many decades. And they turn on a television news program or read a local newspaper and they hear about people being woke, people tearing up the streets in American cities and not being prosecuted. You saw the photograph, actually it's a video clip on Fox News this morning on their website, of young people raiding the Neiman Marcus store in San Francisco, just running in and out. And by the way, it was perfectly evident from that photograph that most of them were white. Why are they doing this? They're doing it because San Francisco has a Marxist district attorney who will not prosecute these crimes. They know they can get away with it. So, yeah, there are things that are defective about America as about any other country. But what other flag would you like to fly, as you put it? And you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, and that's the key. I mean, but they never get those questions, which is the sad mix. It's a sad statement about the media. They never get that question. Now, I do. You mentioned that that these people are not being prosecuted, but President Trump is being prosecuted in New York, and I thought last week these charges against the CFO, whatever his name is, I thought were so weak. I mean, if I'm an anti-Trump guy, I would ask for a refund. I mean, my goodness, is that all they have? They've gone through millions of documents and thousands of hours, and that's all they have?
That's apparently. And no member of the Trump family.
Yeah, and they've gone through thousands of documents. What other company in this country could have an audit of that nature, go through everything they've done for 50 years, and all you come up with is some technical tax violation that, I mean, it just, there's something wrong with that bill. Hopefully it gets thrown out of court real quick so that they can end this garbage. But it speaks volumes about New York City, Bill, that they've got the time to investigate all this time in going after basically a political opponent, and yet people who broke into stores and walked out with computers, I guess there's nothing, they get forgiven, Bill.
That's absolutely correct. And the office that prosecuted these individuals from the Trump business organizations, was the district attorney of Manhattan, whose name is Vance. His father was Cy Vance, who was Secretary of State under Jimmy Carter. He comes from an old Democratic family. And the question that I think has to be asked is, even if these men are guilty of receiving benefits such as the use of a car, the use of an apartment, and that should have been taxable, even if the IRS sends them a bill for these monies, would that bill exceed in size the cost of the investigation? Millions of dollars have been spent of taxpayers' money that is not going to law enforcement, not going to keeping the streets safe, not going to the prosecution of real hardened criminals, but going to investigate an organization that's being investigated only because it is led by a man they don't like politically, Donald Trump. And then when the charges come out, the Trump family isn't involved at all. Not one member of the Trump family has been charged with anything. This is just an outrage. It really is.
Yeah, it is. And I don't remember who said this, whether it was Andy McCarthy or somebody else. I don't remember. But somebody said, the IRS is not involved. The FBI is not involved. That tells me something, because if the IRS was involved, then there may be something more serious. But what I don't get is the Trump family has been there in New York. You know this better than anybody, Bill. They've been there in New York for, I don't know,
decades.
Since Eisenhower or Truman was president, and they've been doing business. They never had any problems until now. Now, all of a sudden, they have to be investigated. And you have to wonder, an organization that big, like the Trump Organization, they've got the best accounting firms in the world doing their paperwork. I'm sure that they took advantage of whatever tax exemption there was, just like anybody else would. But it's hard for me to believe that they would be committing crimes and getting away with it, because they were audited constantly, Bill.
That's right. They were audited, according to President Trump's own statement, every year. They're a big organization. They deal with real estate. They are all over the place, so to speak. They were constantly audited, and nothing ever turned up. And all of a sudden, they do this criminal investigation, really, and they come up with some charges that are, according to articles I've read in the press, that are never prosecuted. If things like this are found, they simply send them a bill for the taxes, and then they can fight it out with the IRS. But this is so obviously political, and once again, we are reminded of the power of prosecutors in the United States, and not only on the local level, but on the federal level. Look at all the prosecutorial activity and investigation during the Trump administration, directed at the Trump administration, and really turned up nothing. And the millions and millions of dollars that have been spent on these things. Apparently, it does not bother the press. The press is now so completely unwoke, in the sense that they're asleep, that they don't care, you know, as long as the right person wins the election, they really don't care. Which brings us, of course, to the subject of the New York City election, which is something you mentioned earlier in the program.
Yeah, you got to tell us who won, right, Bill?
No, I'm not, because I haven't been told what to say, so I don't know how to express it. But we are in the midst of a primary election in New York, the real election. Or the formal election is in November, but the big election is really to determine who the Democratic candidate will be, because that person always wins. Well, there were the exceptions of the Giuliani years and Mike Bloomberg, who never really knew what party he was a member of. I think he started in the Whig Party or one of my other party. Then he became a Republican. Then he became an independent. Then he became a Democrat. I think he's kind of just, you know, a sampler. But the Democratic candidate for mayor, unless there's a huge upset, will become the next mayor. And they cannot seem to run the election. They are using a new procedure called ranked choice voting, in which you get five choices for mayor. It's really quite wonderful. You can rank your first choice, your second choice, your third choice, your fourth choice. And then they announce who won on that basis, and it was Eric Adams, former police captain and currently borough president of the borough of Brooklyn, and then the others. And then they go through a series of tests, mathematical tests, which are a mystery to everybody, and they determine what the people really meant. What they really meant, they would say, you know, we can tell this because we are geniuses. And then they come up with a set of ranks. Based on this rank and who the people really meant, and that may be different from the actual choices that people made. And when they come up with a series of ranks, then you have the first rank and the second rank, and they determine who the candidate will be. I do believe there is a runoff involved if nobody reaches 50% in these ranks. But this is a dangerous system because the voters don't understand it. And you can have a candidate who comes out on top who actually ranked third in the original rankings. Now, in most sane places, and that does not include New York City, you can have a number of candidates running, and if nobody reaches 50%, the top two candidates have a runoff. And right. They decide, and then the voters vote in the runoff, and they decide who the mayoralty candidate will be in their party. But that apparently is too unsophisticated for the New Yorkers, so they came up with this ridiculous system in which the people suddenly find that the person they voted third for is now the mayor. So it's a complete mess. And besides that, They got the first round wrong anyway by including 130,000 votes that should not have been included because they were test votes that were used to test the computers, and they were left in the computers on election day. Another brilliant action by the Board of Elections, which is well known in New York, by the way, for being a dumping ground for every political appointee who can't do a better job. I mean, it has always been a patronage bin. And the people on the Board of Elections may not know nothing about elections. They may never have voted. They may not believe in voting. And they wind up running the election. And, of course, they've botched it already. Now, they say that through computers and the miracle of modern machine politics, they've been able to correct the mistake and that they're now counting from a true count. And nobody believes it.
Yes. Well, I think it's just fascinating because these are the same people who mock others who say that there may have been problems in the election. You know, if you say that there may have been problems in the presidential election, they look at you and they say, well, you're crazy. But all you got to do is look at New York. And, you know, at this point, how can anybody even believe the results of New York City in the last election? I'm sure Biden won, but the numbers, you have to put a big question mark on. on the numbers. Well, I just hope you get a mayor bill or at least a runoff before Labor Day. That would be nice if you could at least know by Labor Day who the candidates are.
Well, actually, they tell us by mid-July.
Okay, good.
So we might actually know. Now, I worry every day that the calendars at the Board of Elections haven't been updated to July.
They probably still
read June, because after all, they probably haven't determined which person updates the calendars. So we don't know.
Yeah.
This is the city. This is the country's quote premier city. That's the I'll put the quotes around that, and it's an embarrassment. It really is at a time of crisis in New York, because the crime rate is rising dramatically. People are afraid to go out. You see 95% of the victims of gun deaths in New York are African-American, 95%, and yet we can't even run an election.
Yeah. Let me take a break, Bill, because I do want to pick up on this topic of the crime, because I think that's also becoming a liability for the Democrats. So we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with our friend Bill. We got a lot to get into. Right back. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We're chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Just as we were finishing the first segment, Bill started talking about crime. But I do want to say one quick thing before we talk about crime, very important topic. And that is that whatever happened to people voting one day for election and just, you know, touching one name and saying, I want this guy, and that's it. I mean, that we voted like that for centuries, and I guess they decided to rewrite the rules in New York City, Bill.
That's exactly right. Well, you see, because they understand what people feel, because these are experts,
that's it.
And they're woke. And this was originally the system that they chose because they thought it would increase minority representation, and that the feelings of minority groups would be expressed. But you're absolutely right. You know, when people rank their choices 1 through 5 on the original ballot, and this is the only time that the people are going to chance to vote for the actual nominee, as opposed to the November election, that does not mean if you vote for let's say somebody who's in third place at the end, the system is supposed to tell you, well, that person is in third place because when you rank all the others and put it all together mathematically, that is the person in third place. And that person then bounces to first place when all this mathematics stuff is done. What they're saying to people is, if the election were run again, this is the person you would put at the top, because we know that. We know that. That's crazy.
Right.
It's just a crazy system. You know, you have situations where people, 4 and 5 people, are running in a primary, and you have to have a runoff between the top two. And many people who voted for other candidates in the primary then are required to vote for one of the two, and they pick a candidate who may not have been the second or third choice. And we accept that, but they are the ones doing the picking, not a machine, not a computer.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a disaster of a system, and I hope they do away with it. And simply, I don't care how many candidates they want to put on the ballot. I mean, that's their choice. But it should be the top two vote getters, not some kind of a system. Simply, whoever came in number one, whoever came in number two, go to a runoff if they don't get 50%. That's the way it should be. That's the way it is in most places.
Yeah.
But I guess we're not smart like New Yorkers.
Oh, no. We should not and you dare not question. You know, it's really is amazing, isn't it, that we've come to the point where if somebody questions an election, they're accused of undermining democracy.
Right.
Questioning an election it's part of the process. People have a right to review what has happened, review the way the election was run, observe
right.
any irregularities, and they have a right to raise questions about that election. But once Trump began to question the 2020 election, this was called a threat to, quote, our democracy. I always love the way they say our democracy. These are usually the same people who tear the United States down every day. But how dare you question our democracy? Well, I think they're going to get a lot more questions, and I think people are going to resent the idea that if you question an election, you're undemocratic.
That's right. Well, especially after what we saw in New York City, which is a disgrace. I mean, when the New York Times, I think they did an editorial, you know, talking about how bad it was, you know they're in deep trouble. But you mentioned crime, and of course crime is a big topic in New York City. It's a big topic, really, just about every major city. Chicago had another crazy weekend, you know, where, I mean, it's almost, the numbers are almost unbelievable that you could have that kind of violence in an American city and the people in power blame it on racism. I'm sitting here trying to figure out Chicago. You had, for the, I mean, 10 people dead, something like 60 people shot. They're all black, by the way. They're all black. Not a single white guy was involved in that. The mayor is black. The chief of police is black. The congressman is black. Everybody's black, but they're blaming it on racism. And I'm sitting there saying, you know, how can, you know, please, we're not that stupid when they do that. And the media apparently goes along with it because nobody in the media raises their hand and says, you know what, this is black people killing black people. I mean, this is tragic.
Yes.
And they're usually black young men killing other black young men and, unfortunately, four-year-old girls in the middle who get killed. But it's all racism. Nobody wants to look at the factors behind all of this, Bill.
Well, and that's the point. You discuss crime today in today's media, and they will tell you, well, the root causes of these criminal actions are racism and capitalism and this and that. But they never actually go into the lives of people and the lives of communities to find out what really is causing the crime. There are other communities, including communities of color, where the crime rate is very low, and they never give us a comparison. We know that one of the things that is never discussed, which just logic tells you has a dramatic effect on crime, is fatherlessness. You know, 80% of the children of Harlem don't know who their fathers are. This is completely ignored in any discussion, and also culture is ignored, and culture doesn't mean race. Culture can apply to any group racially in the United States where there are problems. And I'll give you an example. Some years ago, I was at a seminar in New York about the possible development of a television program that would give medical advice. And one of the participants was a public health service officer, the Uniform Public Health Service. And he was telling me that the dirty little secret, he said, of the American healthcare system is that people who don't get healthcare usually are people who don't want it. And he said it's a very hard subject to discuss publicly because you're dealing with family beliefs, with religious beliefs, with history, and you begin in a way to insult people by discussing it, but it must be discussed. It is not discussed. It's not discussed today. It's not discussed. It has not been discussed yesterday. We just refuse in the news media to discuss crime on a mature and thoughtful basis. And when you get a situation in New York under the Giuliani administration where the murder rate was reduced by 80%, you're told, well, it must have been a coincidence or it must have been something else. It didn't have anything to do with the police, nothing to do with the police.
Right.
And then finally, when some journalists, this goes back to the 1990s, when some journalists finally had to concede that, yes, crime was being defeated in New York and, yes, the police were involved, they came up with this line. It's happening, but it's turning New York into a fascist city.
Right.
Yeah. Because if you can walk the streets safely and black women can go to church safely on Sunday, it's all because of fascism.
Right.
That's how far out these people are.
Right, and they just don't want to deal with the reality. So the first thing they do is they say, well, we got to do something about the guns coming into Chicago. Or I guess they're going to Indiana. That's it. They're going to Indiana, and they're buying their guns, and then they're driving down to Chicago and killing people. Well, okay, then why don't you arrest them on the highway? You know, why don't you do something before they come into – I mean, it seems like it's always either the guns' fault or racism. Nobody ever wants to look at the problem underneath, and I don't – you know, I don't know how we can fix the problem. You got to know what the problem is before you – to me, you know, maybe this is a silly example, but this is like the guy who's 50 pounds overweight, and then he blames it on the cheeseburgers.
That's
and he says, "All those damn cheeseburgers! They make me fat." Well, yeah, they do. Maybe you should stop eating them. Okay, I mean, that's a silly example, but it's one that I think, you know, no more silly than to hear that it's all about racism, Bill.
That's absolutely true. I'll give you an example of something that was really quite stunning. It was pointed out by a columnist, and I cannot remember which one it was, and I wish I did to give credit because it was such a wonderful observation. We have a series of schools in New York known as the special high schools. They are the elite schools that are world famous, like the Bronx High School of Science, the Fame School, that was featured in the movie of Fame, Stuyvesant High School. These are schools that you have to get into through an examination. And one of the things that people have noticed over the years is that the percentage of African-American students who actually get into the schools is dramatically lower than the percentage of African-American students in the school system generally. Now, thoughtful people have been saying, well, why not make sure that those students are being given the same quality tutoring and preparation as all the other students, and let's make it an absolutely equal playing field. That's a perfectly good idea. But this year, the results came out, and they were typical. The overwhelming, the largest group getting into the schools were Asian American students who are just terrific and study very hard. The disappointing numbers were in the black community. And the school chancellor, who was a racialist, by racialist I mean someone who sees race everywhere as the only issue, saying this shows the racism in the system, and this shows that the test to get into the schools must be racist. And whether that's true or not, and it is not true, there's because a certain number of black kids did get in and got in through sheer merit. But one of the columnists noted the fact that in her statements about the test, she did not once congratulate the students who got into those schools on sheer work. Not once did she mention them and compliment them. And it's a reflection of the values of some of these so-called educators. If you knock your brains out, do your best, study every night, you don't get mentioned. You don't get complimented. The only thing they come up with is, well, how much of a racial balance do we have in the school system? And that is no way to improve anything because nothing will be improved.
That's correct. And that's happening. You wrote an article about the bar exam in one of the states out west. In the West, I think Oregon, I think it was. And this is crazy. I mean, it's the same argument I was having the other day. We'll get to the Arizona law in a minute here, the opinion by the Supreme Court about Arizona in a second, because it kind of ties into what I'm about to say. You know, every time I've been in these discussions on Univision talking about the voting law here in Texas, they say that it discriminates against Hispanics. And I point out that I have never heard a Hispanic Republican complain that he cannot vote. He or she cannot vote. On the contrary, Hispanic Republicans vote in huge numbers. If you look at their numbers, they're almost the same as white people in terms of vote. Huge numbers.
Yes.
But they never complain. In fact, I challenged the station. I say, why don't you find me somebody who wanted to vote Republican but couldn't because of his race or ethnic? They can't. So the Democrats, you know, all they can say is it stops people from voting, but then when you say, but it doesn't stop the people who didn't vote for you from voting, they don't know what to say other than, well, of course, everything is racist. But anyway, it's amazing, this thing with crime, but it's one more point I wanted to make, Bill, and I wanted to get your reaction to this because you wrote about it this week. It's hurting Democrats now. It's starting to hurt Democrats politically.
Oh, sure.
Because this is happening in Democrat districts, And I think it was Bernard Kirk, who I correct. What's his name? The fellow who used to be the chief of police in New York.
Carrick. He was Carrick. The police commissioner.
Yeah, he said something over the weekend that it's basically we're slaughtering black young men in our cities.
That's right.
It's not about racism. Right. We're slaughtering black young men, and nobody wants to stand up and defend them, Bill.
That's the point. Nobody wants to actually discuss it. And as you pointed out before, these young black men are killed almost exclusively by other black young men. I think I read somewhere that each day in New York, not in New York, but each day in America, on average, 24 black people are killed, are murdered. And nobody wants to discuss it. Nobody wants to discuss it. And, you know, we have a congressional black caucus. They were presumably put there to represent the interests of black people. I don't think they discuss it. If you ask them about crime, they will give you the approved answer that it's based on racism, it's based on poverty, and it's based on this, it's based on that. A very, very bad situation that we have. It really is.
That's
And it's not getting better under this administration. And what is also interesting is that those actions that have been taken nationally in the past are now being denounced by the very people who took them. I mean, Joe Biden was a big supporter of the crime bill of the mid-90s, which put many policemen on the street, which reformed part of the legal system, and which did, in fact, result in the incarceration of criminals, not of innocent people, but of criminals. And now we're being told they actually now teach in colleges, they have courses devoted to teaching that incarceration should be eliminated.
Right.
I mean,
it's just amazing.
This is madness. It's madness. It has nothing to do with reality. But this is a situation that arises when you allow your schools to be dominated not by real historians, but by ideologists who believe that everything must fit the ideology. How dare you solve the crime problem without going along with our ideology?
That's right.
And that's what you have.
No, but politically, though, it's hurting Democrats, and I think this is why you're beginning to see, you know, many Democrats worry about this, because the crime is happening in their districts, and it's starting to hurt them. We've got a couple of other topics I want to get into today, very important topics. The Arizona opinion bill by the Supreme Court was the correct decision, and it means that states can now run their elections, which is the way we've always done it. That's pretty much what the opinion said. And I think that here in Texas, for example, when we vote for this voting rights law that we should be voting on in the next 2 weeks and signing it, and then in Georgia, I think this is pretty much the end of these attacks on voting laws by the states, because the Supreme Court is saying, if you're going to bring that law to us or even in the federal courts, if you're going to say that there's discrimination, you're going to have to prove it. You can't just say there's discrimination. You got to prove it with numbers. And they don't have the numbers to prove it, Bill. So I think this is a big victory for those of us who believe in transparent elections, Bill.
Well, you're absolutely right. And it was a very good decision by the Supreme Court. It's now being denounced by the Democrats. I think Chuck Schumer said it was a dark day in American history.
Right.
No, it was not a dark day in American history, unless you believe the narrative that the Arizona laws were all set up to discourage minorities from voting. But as you said, I think that was a wonderful thing. I'm going to quote it. As you said, I've never heard a Hispanic Republican say he had trouble voting.
Right. And apparently, you know, based on Jorge Ramos of Univision came out with some stats the other day saying that 38% of Hispanics voted for President Trump. They had no trouble voting.
That's
no
right.
No trouble whatsoever.
That's right. In fact, that's one of the biggest political stories around today, and that is the shifting of the Hispanic community rightward. And you have to believe that the next community that is going to make that trip will be the Asian American community, because they are left out of all discussions about minorities. They are discriminated against by the very system that it claims to protect them, and they are born Republicans. If you look at the values of the Asian community, those are basically Republican values. Now, if the Democrats lose most of the Hispanic community, or at least a large chunk of the Hispanic community, and lose a large chunk of the Asian community, which is the nation's fastest growing minority, they're in trouble. They're in serious, serious trouble. And I think that is happening now. And now the Democratic Party, I mean, in its wisdom, I laugh, is taking on probably the most important constituency in America, parents.
That's a really smart move. Yeah,
that's a really smart move.
Yeah, that is really smart. I mean, I can just imagine an election consultant sitting there saying, here's what you need to do. You got to go after the parents and call them racist because they don't want their kids taught this stuff. Yeah, that's amazing. That is amazing that they're doing that. I mean, the thing about parents, Bill, is that they vote, the last time I checked.
That's right. They do.
They vote, especially when their kids are on the line. And we've seen here in Texas, you know, the school board meetings have become pretty hostile to the teachers union. Well, not so much the teachers union, because the right to work state makes it a little bit more difficult for the unions here. But the parents are involved, and if I was a Democrat, I'd be worried about that. But the Arizona law, what it really probably does, it puts an end to another silly idea, going after Georgia, the Department of Justice going after Georgia. I mean, I don't know how they're going to defeat Georgia after that opinion, Bill. I mean, they're going to have to demonstrate that there was discrimination, and I don't think they can, Bill, because there wasn't any.
There wasn't, and it'll be very, very hard for them to win that. And speaking of that lawsuit that the outrageous Department of Justice is bringing, isn't it interesting? It's the first major lawsuit being brought by the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, Ms. Clark, whose nomination was very controversial because she has made some very anti-police statements in the past, some statements that could be considered anti-Semitic, very much a left-winger. And unfortunately, she was confirmed. I don't think she should have been confirmed. And also to see Mr. Milquetoast, Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States, go along with this stuff. I had some hopes for him. I had thought, you know, based on his judicial experience, on his reputation, that he would be something as Attorney General. He has turned out to be nothing more than a political hack. And I'm sorry about it. That's a department you always want to be run well, and it is not being run well. It's being run as a branch of the left wing of the Democratic Party. I think they're going to lose this suit, and that may be a lesson to them. But this administration has another 2.5 years to run. 3.5 years to run. It is a very, very young administration, and already the signs from it are not good.
Well, they're also getting beaten in the courts. There was an interesting article about this, and you know the courts are reversing a lot of these executive orders. So, I mean, we may want to talk about that down the road. But a lot of these opinions, I mean, a lot of these executive orders, like for example, favoring minority farmers versus whites, the pipeline is in the courts. All kinds of stuff is in the courts. Which is not good. I mean, when you write a bunch of executive orders and they end up in the court, that's not what the president really likes, Bill, because that means he's probably going to lose if they're in the courts, Bill.
That's absolutely true. You speak the truth. We are in a very interesting political era. We talk about the 2024 presidential election, but we should remember that the midterms are coming up. These midterms will be, I think, the most important midterms in modern American history.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
If the Republicans can flip the House, even that will be a tremendous improvement because all money bills originate in the House.
Mm-hmm.
But if they can flip both houses of Congress, that would be terrific. If they don't flip the Senate, we will still have the problem of judges appointed by President Biden in a position to be confirmed by the Senate. I'm hoping for the flipping of both houses, but even one would make a difference in stopping the slide towards socialism.
Right. Let me bring up a couple of quick points. Afghanistan, I guess we're finally out of Afghanistan. We left the airport. Personally, I think there was a mistake to leave and not have a force left behind. I mean, this force that was in Afghanistan, 3,000 or 4,000 soldiers, they were not fighting. They were basically an insurance policy, and I'm not one of those who believes that we should be fighting for Afghan democracy or anything like that, but I always feel that an American force in Afghanistan is a check against terrorism. So I'm disappointed that we didn't leave a force behind. I know we got forces nearby, but it's not the same thing as having troops at that airport or nearby. So I think that may turn out to be a big mistake by President Biden. I know everybody wants to leave, but look, we've been in Korea for 60 years, and I don't hear anybody complaining about that, Bill.
No, and we have 36,000 troops, I believe.
Yes.
That was the last number I saw in Korea. Yes, we've been in Korea since 1950. That's 70 years, actually. And it's true, nobody complains, because the investment is a good one for the United States. It's a good one for Asia. It has prevented the North Vietnamese from invading South Korea, which they did in 1950. And we also, I might add, have troops in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last time I looked, we defeated Germany in 1945. And
right.
the Cold War, at least theoretically, is in remission, if not completely over. And yet we still keep troops in Germany. So I don't understand the logic of some of the foreign policy decisions this administration has been making. I do give them credit for being tougher in the negotiations with Iran than I thought they would be. And those negotiations might fail because there's a new administration in Iran that is even more extreme than
mm-hmm.
the one that is leaving. I don't know if they're going to be able to make a deal and make it stick and sell it to the American people. I also like the fact that the administration in the Middle East has endorsed the Abraham Accords, at least, you know, formally. They're not going to try
mm-hmm.
to obstruct them. And that's a good move. I try to give credit where it's due, and I think
right.
in those areas the administration has been okay. But I think that what is going to have to happen for there to be political change in the Democratic Party is for the woke candidates, the ones that are obligated to AOC and who are part of her regime, so to speak, to be defeated. You know,
right.
they are a small part of the party, but they do win elections in some critical areas. And if that result can be reversed, I think that she will lose influence and fade away. Now, there is a possibility, and it is talked about here in New York, that she might want to take on Chuck Schumer in next year's Senate primary in New York State. She would be running against, for the Senate nomination, not only the sitting senior senator, but the Senate majority leader. That is a tough fight. We don't know if she's going to do it yet. It's being talked about. But if she does, that could really split the Democratic Party wide open. Because the idea of having the majority leader of the Senate defeated by a political extremist is not something that's going to go down well with the majority of Democrats.
Well, hopefully they don't vote by ranking the candidates
in that
primary. Hopefully it's going to be an old-fashioned, you know, you choose one or the other. But, Bill, it's just an amazing week that we're looking forward to. We have a president who needs to check his 3x5 cards to answer
yes.
questions. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a doctor. But this is obviously not a man who can do well on his feet. We don't expect the president to be an expert on everything, but he should be able to talk, you know, just without having to check everything. It worries me. It worries me. As I said, I'm not a doctor. I'm not making a medical analysis. I'm just looking at the TV screen and seeing a man who doesn't seem capable of answering some simple questions, Bill.
That's right. And they're now debating, as you see, the issue of whether he will run again in 2024. I think more grim questions might be asked, because, you know, mm-hmm. we should discuss it sometime. All the political talk right now is about Kamala Harris.
Right.
It isn't even about Biden, and the feeling that she could not defeat any Republican that the Republicans put up, including Donald Trump. And now there's buzz this morning that Pete Buttigieg, who I believe is Secretary of Transportation, having probably never been on a bus, is really maneuvering behind the scenes to replace her. And you know, he checks off the box that he's gay, so he has
right.
at least something going for him, because he's a white guy, and that's not popular, but he checks off that one box. But I find this fascinating. There's so much talk about the Vice President of the United States.
Well, that's fascinating. I guess the one thing that would not change if Pete becomes VP is that we would still have a second gentleman as vice president.
That's right.
That's the one thing. Yes. That would not change, right. Because, of course, he has a husband who's a man, but that's another topic for another day. But you're right. You're right about Kamala Harris. That could be the talk of the summer. So we'll pick that up the next time. But as always, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for another enjoyable show, and have a wonderful day in New York. And we'll keep track of Urgent Agenda to see who won that primary, Bill.
We'll tell you when they figure it out, but always wait a day in New York after they make an announcement. Because by evening you say, oh, my God, wait a minute. These votes from Portugal shouldn't have been counted.
That's right. That's right. The Portugal wing of the New York City Democrat Party voted illegally or something like that. Yes. Bill, thank you. Have a great week. Always, it's a great pleasure to talk to you, and look forward to the next time.
I do, too, Silvio. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, always a fun conversation with Bill, always an informative conversation with Bill, and that's why we do it. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful week, everybody, the rest of it, and we'll talk to you the next time. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.